Hello, I'm Pastor Rod Holler of the Cape Baptist Church in Cape Coral, Florida. I hope this message will be a blessing to you. Thanks for listening.
Ecclesiastes, the value of a companion. The last messages has been the search of a man looking for meaning and purpose to life, but the problem is he is not looking to God. And the truth is, this is the reality. I think what makes our world so challenging is that people are thinking that they are going to find satisfaction because of all the technology. Well, if I take a pill, my headache goes away. I go to the doctor and I can have treatments that they didn't know before. And I can get a car and I can travel from here to there, or an airplane or whatever. And we can build houses, and do you want the temperature a little colder? Adjust the thermostat. We live in a world that most people have never lived in. We still have the basic needs. But I think this is one of the things that makes our time on this earth so challenging. Is people truly have been conditioned since they're little, you just go to the store and buy it. The grocery store is always stocked. And we have been pretty much protected. We have been pretty blessed so far on this land as far as war. Compared to other countries, we don't have too many problems. I have never been in war. I hope I never have to go to war. But I know this, it's awful. And there are some people, that's all they know. And it would be better for me to die on a raft at sea trying to get to another land than to spend one more day in this place. I remember that back with the Vietnamese boat people. I'd rather sink out there in the ocean than stay here one more day. And it is a mess in this world because people have a tendency to look. Well, education and enough research. But ultimately, every man dies and we're going to stand before God. Solomon is falling back into despair by these incredible injustices of life, the disappointments, the frustration, the emptiness. He wonders, if God's on the throne, then why do the wicked prosper? And yet his thinking is faulty. They may prosper for a brief time, but ultimately they're going to the grave and they have to face eternity. Folks, don't ever give up in this life seeking God's face. Because even though everybody else may be going the other way, we need to stand God's way. That's what's going to last forever. Only for a season do they prosper. And the truth is, they do prosper for a season. But it's empty, and it's vanity and vexation of spirit. Ecclesiastes 3:1, to everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under heaven, but it is only a season. Ultimately, when we are done, it's under the heaven, but above the heaven, there's no more time. It just goes into eternity. Well, in our last study, we considered either way you lose. We talked about the tyranny and the oppression of men on other men, the emptiness of effort and despair. We considered briefly there are 28 verses in Ecclesiastes that refer to vanity. For example, Ecclesiastes 4:7, then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. Every time he comes back and looks under the sun, guess what he finds? Frustration, vexation, and vanity. What is the point? You want to know why God repeats it? So we get it. He wants us to truly learn from Solomon's experience. Life is vanity if God is not in it, but it doesn't have to be that way. Life above the sun is not a lose-lose proposition. Folks, with God, it's a win-win proposition. Because there's a very real spiritual battle. God is on the throne and prayer changes things. Did you know God is always up to something good, and in eternity it will be worth it all? If you're ever tempted to throw in the towel, argue yourself back into logical thinking. Now, wait a minute. I know better than that. Because one day when you stand before God, you'll be so glad you did. The value of a companion is our consideration tonight. Let's take a look at Ecclesiastes 4, 7 through 12. Then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone, and there's not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet there is no end of all his labor. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, and it is sore travail. Verse 9, two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that's alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can be one warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Outline, very simple. 7 and 8, one that's all alone. And 9 through 12, the value of a companion. Then I returned, verse 7, and saw vanity under the sun. There's one alone. Our last study was one day God will judge. And think about how it flows into this. We see this oppression of people. We see then right deeds are envied by a neighbor. It's like, I can't even do right. People envy me. Fools destroy themselves. It's better to have a little with quietness than having much. And then he said, there's one alone. There's one alone. This man has no one as a companion. And he's looking at the oppression of the world, and he sees all the problems around, and he looks at the lonely man. He has no child or brother, and yet he has an endless amount of work to do. Now, it's interesting about this man that Solomon is considering. Take a look again at Ecclesiastes 4, 8. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet there is no end of his labor. Here it is. Neither is his eye satisfied with riches. In other words, he has riches, but he's not satisfied. His riches aren't making him happy. He's alone. And yet this man, with all of his wealth, he doesn't have a brother, he doesn't have a child, he's alone. He never says, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? He never even considers all of his frustration. It never occurs to him. You talk out in la-la land. You're alone. You're amassing this wealth for what? And it never occurs to you to say, why am I doing all this? Why am I doing all this labor? And why am I bereaving my soul of good? He's a miser. He won't even spend any money on his own good. What's the point? He has all this wealth, and he's not satisfied. You know what he's doing? He wants more money. I'm not satisfied yet with all the money I have. He is alone without friends. He does not even enjoy his wealth. And yet he doesn't even think about it. It never occurs to him. Do you realize how blinded people are in this world? They are truly blinded. Their lights are on. Is there anybody at home in there? What are you thinking? Remember what we studied earlier with Solomon. When he talked about in chapter 2, he talked about how when I die, I'm going to leave my goods to somebody. I don't even know who they are. He said, I'm going to leave it to a man that shall be after me. And he says, I went on to talk about, I don't even know if the man's going to be a fool. He knew he was going to let his wealth to somebody else, and that caused him frustration. But this lonely man has nobody to leave it to, and he's not even thinking about it. Does he think he's going to live forever on this earth? He's worked hard. He has not even considered the future. He never says the middle of verse 8, "For whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good?" What are you working for? To just get more money? And Solomon says, "This is also vanity, yet it's sore travail." No kidding. And Solomon's contemplation of this man brings him great despair. What is the point? You can't take the fruits of your labor with you unto death. Your labors are taken by others. And he considers the sad state of this man. This is, once again, the incredible recurrence of this theme of life under the sun is empty and meaningless. He has labored hard. That has not been denied. He has earned money. For what? Ecclesiastes 4:4. "Again, I, Solomon, considered all travail and every right work, even good things, that for this a man is envied of his neighbor." So he can imagine this with this wealthy man who has nobody. He works hard, even if he's earning it honestly, and then his neighbor envies him. They don't even appreciate a good friendship. He's alone. What's the point? Quote, "Solomon's mind was in constant exercise. We find him returning from one side to another, only to fasten upon some new illustration of this world's vanity. The slothful fool sits with his folded hands, preferring quietness at any cost. Contrasted with him, we have the covetous fool, full of active energy. He has chosen money for his God. He cannot plead in excuse the necessary claims of a large family. He's alone. He has neither child nor brother. Yet so long as he can add one farthing to his hoard, he cannot bear the thought of giving up. There is no end of his labor. Labor indeed it is, without rest or satisfaction, however he may heap up his treasure." But it is not only the miser here who is the man that spends his money upon himself and upon his own selfish gratifications, forgetting its true use and responsibility. "We are not our own, Christian, neither is our silver or our gold our own, it's God's." The man of covetousness would keep his money within his last grasp, but realize no other satisfaction. "But all this is vanity and severe travail, neither has he soberly calculated profit and loss." Further, quote, "He has no child nor brother to inherit his substance. Some worldly men whose bellies are filled with hidden treasures have enjoyed much. When they die, they leave the rest of their substance to their babes. But the man here described has no children nor any relations to leave his wealth unto. Yet is there no end of his labor. When he has executed one scheme to get riches, he forms another. And having finished one work, he enters upon another. He rises early, sits up late, works and toils night and day as if he had not worth a dollar, and had a large and numerous family to provide for. Whereas there's no end for his labors, or gets by his labor, there's no end of his treasure. His eye is not satisfied with riches. He sees bags of gold, though he takes great deal of sure in looking into them. He makes no use of them. He is not satisfied with what he has. He wants more. Neither does he say, 'For whom do I labor?' Neither having a wife or child or relation or friend, yet so wretchedly stupid and thoughtless as never once to put this question to himself, 'Who am I toiling for? I am heaping up wretches, and I know not who shall gather them.' It is a vexation to a worldly man to leave his substance behind him, and even to a man that has an heir to inherit it, when he knows not whether it will be a wise man or a fool. But for a man who has no heir at all, and yet to be toiling and laboring for the world is gross stupidity, downright madness, and especially when he deprives himself of the comfort of what he's possessed of. He won't even spend it, hence he has this bereavement of soul." What is this? What are you doing? "Instead of enjoying what's given to him, he withholds it from himself, lives in pinching want while amidst great plenty, and he has not power to eat what he has. He's a fool. His thinking and resulting lifestyles are vanity and vexation of spirit. Look again at Ecclesiastes 4:5. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. How so? By his lifestyle. He's not literally cutting off his arm and devouring it. He's eating away his very body by this empty exercise of great labor, and then don't even enjoy it. And he's destroying himself. Solomon discloses the most remarkable among many sources of human misery because it springs not out of failure but out of success. I do believe one of the greatest problems we have in our country, we're cursed with wealth. Now, I know it's not evenly distributed around. But folks, sometimes you need to go over to a foreign country and see people begging in the street. I've seen begging like I've never seen here. I'm not saying we don't have poverty in this country. We do. But there are some food kitchens and there are other things that other parts of the world don't have. That's not an option. This man is cursed and tormented by his fortune. And there's never enough of it. Ecclesiastes 4:9. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. If they fall, the one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him that's alone when he falls, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. How can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. He now directs his attention from the man alone to a companion. By comparison, what is it like to have a companion in life? First, the two accomplish more than one because of synergy. Hence, there are greater profits from labor. Look at it. With a companion, verse 9, two are better than one because they have good reward for their labor. Here this man is laboring very hard, but there's no reward in it. There's nobody to share it with. At least you can go home and talk to your spouse. Somebody, but this guy's alone. And the two working together, they have reward in their labor. Second, if one falls, the other can help. Verse 10, if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that's alone when he falls, for he hath not another. Comparing this man who is alone compared with a man that has a companion. He can help his fellow. This man is in sore travail because he doesn't have anybody with him. He can talk. He can be encouraged. No one's to help him up. If two together, they keep warm. The third benefit of a companion. If two lie together, they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? And the fourth benefit, one can be overpowered, but two can withstand an assault. Verse 12. If one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Summarizing these four truths, what's the benefit of a friend, of a value, of a companion? They have a good reward of their labor. If they fall, one can help the other. They have comfort in life. They can generate heat to each other. And security from harm, the two shall withstand an assault. And it's interesting that he sets forth these four things and he quickly says something else. At the end of verse 12, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Two are great. Do you see the value of a companion? That companion is great. And two people are wonderful. But he says, you know what? Three's even better. You want friends? You want to help in this life? Surround yourself with good people. I think it's quite clearly the point he's going to come with is, yes, even to the unsaved, it's better if they're not alone. But how much better in Christian fellowship that we can enjoy and the power of three. Two are good, but the principle is the more you add, the stronger it gets. Quote, this doctrine is taught in the fable of the bundle of sticks the old man gave to his sons to break, which, while fastened together, could not be done. But when they are bound and took out singly, were easily snapped asunder, teaching them thereby unity among themselves as their greatest security against a common enemy. The same instruction is given by this threefold cord. While it remains twisted together, it's not easily broke. But if the threads are untwisted and unloosed, they are soon snapped asunder. So persons in religious fellowship, be they more or fewer, while they keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace, they are terrible as an army with banners, and the gates of hell cannot prevail against them. Oh, the importance of unity in church. Further, quote, it's an observation no less than common that kindled coals, if placed asunder, go out, but if heaped together, quicken and enliven each other, and afford a lasting heat. The same will hold good in the case now before us. If Christians, kindled by the grace of God, unite, they will quickly and enliven each other. But if they separate and keep asunder, no marvel if they soon grow cold or tepid. If two or three meet together in Christ's name, they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? This simple study tonight started out with a man alone. He works, and he doesn't even know why he works or for who he works. What's the point? He doesn't even consider the future. He acquires wealth, but in the process, he's destroying his own flesh. Obviously, this is life of vanity and vexation of the spirit. So Solomon points out to us the benefit of a companion, because their combined efforts are greater than their individual accomplishments. In other words, the value of a companion, 1 + 1 = 3. Because two get more done together than they do on working individually. Such is the power of a companion. Even life under the sun is better with a companion, but far greater is life above the sun with a companion. Two have strength, but when God is the third party, then the cord is surely not broken. I want you to consider companions in the Bible. Genesis chapter 2, verse 18, and the Lord God said, it is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an help meet or fit for him. God knew right from the beginning we needed a companion. Consider companionship in the ministry. Christ in Mark chapter 6, verse 7, and he, Jesus, called unto the 12 and began to send them forth 2 by 2. The importance of even somebody to stand by your side in ministry. It's important. Christ knew that. He didn't send them out 1 by 1. That doesn't mean you can't be effective as a one person. But how much better it is when we have somebody by our side. How about Christ when he sent the 70 in Luke 10:1? After these things, the Lord appointed other 70 also, different from the 12. And he sent them 2 by 2 before his face into every city and place whither he himself would come. The importance of companionship in ministry. How about the importance of companionship in Christian fellowship? Matthew 18:20, for where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them. The power of uniting Christians in two and three or greater. And how about this great one? When you are alone, you're not alone because God's there. Let your conversation be without covetous and be content with such things as you have. Why? For he, God, has said, I will never leave thee or forsake thee. The power of a companion. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Implying he's by himself. Why? Because thou art with me. Oh, we need somebody. No one was designed by God to be an island unto themselves. We need each other. And that is why the devil works so hard to cause division among churches. In the church, and among other churches. It's a sad condition, but it's true. The devil wants to destroy the unity of Christians. Don't let it happen.
This is Pastor Rod Holler. I pray you enjoyed that message. Thanks for listening.